This is Barry Tyker of the UW Oral History Project. It's June 3rd, 1993. I'm in Birch Hall with Professor Skoug, and we're continuing the interview we began yesterday. Professor Skoug, you said you had some comments you wanted to make about some of your colleagues in the botany department based on the roster that I had given you a few days ago.
No, I think I covered most of that. I was thinking more, you asked me about any clubs I belong
to. Okay, let's go with the clubs.
Well, I would say this, my closest friendship with people on the campus been mostly in the physiological areas, in the med school, Jerry Mueller, oncology, and Harold Deutsch in physiological chemistry. They've been very close friends for some 50 years now. And some other people talked about the professional collaboration with Strong in biochemistry, particularly. And SARS, to some extent, in bacteriology, on the Lakes and Streams project. Burris in biochemistry. Burris is always a good fellow to see if you need help. He's very helpful and very useful. You know, I ran across old man Fred one of his later years, and he says, "Who's the most important fellow on campus now? Who's the most important fellow?" I said, "I don't know. It's Bob Burris."
Oh, really?
Yeah. Well, I think that covers those people.
So you were mainly in with the physiology crowd, which was across the departments and across campus.
Yeah.
Did you have any? Were there any clubs or organizations, formal or informal, with you people?
We had a technology club, run by Mark Shannon Meyer, zoology, and included people like Hansen over in veterinary science. People involved with the radiation technology in med school, Cameron, Campbell, and Mueller, and Deutsch, of course. Some people, those are the people I recall. That went for quite a long time. Then there was the Fourth Tuesday Club. Which met once a month, which involved people from all the science departments.
What did they do? Present papers?
Dinner, and a drink. The drink was a relatively recent method of faculty club, with a lecture by one of the members each time, which was very good, but I haven't been to that club for many years now.
So it was more or less a dining club.
No, well, we had the meal,
sort of, yeah,
but it was more professional thing.
Had you ever belonged to a dining club on campus?
Oh yes, I belonged to an old one. Dr. Bryan brought me into this soon after I came here. He was a member. Old man Schmitz, the surgeon, was in charge of the med school surgery. He was a prominent member. Kiekhofer, you know, you heard of him?
Oh, yeah. Uh-huh. They used to call him Wild Bill, didn't they?
Yeah. And there were some other people from med school. It gradually developed. I guess I'm the oldest member now in terms of belonging. Herrick from, and when he died, Mulvihill came, took his place. There was Harold Kubli, you heard of him? He was a member, he's quit now. Shudi, chemist.
Yeah, recognize.
John Ferry, chemistry. Stedman from law school. And Whitley, remember him, English department?
I remember the name, I didn't know.
Yeah, he was quite able in speaking, writing. Mm-hmm. Very nice person. Saxe from history, remember him?
I've heard of it, yes.
He's gone, of course. Present time, Bless from astronomy. And Dolan from all that disability outfit.
Over at the University Club.
Who else? Hard to remember.
What's the name of the club?
I don't know. I can't remember. It must have had a name. Well, finally, we got so few that we decided we'll fuse with another dining club. Also getting kind of scared. You know, the rules and regulations of these clubs are such that they really don't fit with the modern housewife very well.
Mm. Oh, and that the men were in one room and the women?
Well, the women were not considered at all, except once a year we have the women. We just go through. So we fused with this other group, and that included the Cameron, what's his name? Cameron, the geologist. Mm-hmm. Fella in horticulture and genetics, Pelequin. Mm-hmm. Sumi.
Oh, yeah.
Anyway, there are about five of them. Woolsey just died.
Yes, Clinton Woolsey.
Yeah. So we're about 8 or 10, but most of the meetings nowadays, we're about 6 or 7 people come.
Do you still have the same formats that you had?
No. We decided not to go to the houses. We go now to some restaurant.
Hmm.
We sometimes had speeches, but, you know, most of the time not. Hmm. Give and take. Nice. I don't remember. This other club, Raper was a member of that one time. So was Old Ingram. And present time. I think I mentioned most of the people.
Yeah. Now you're asked to join those clubs, yeah, right? It's a privilege to join those clubs, right?
Yeah.
They solicit your membership, essentially.
Yes, yes, yes. I was joining, and I kind of felt kind of awkward in that thing. I was a good deal younger than most of those people. So I decided I was going to resign from this club. So I talked to Junk Harriet.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
He says, you don't do that, you can't do that. You know, these are old medicine families. You just don't resign from this.
You're in it for life.
He was a very nice gent, you know, Harriet.
Hmm? Yeah, I've heard good things about him. Hmm. Now, you were in another club. You're in the poker club.
The poker club?
Or a poker club.
The poker club.
The poker club.
Clubs. belongs to two poker clubs. One of them, you know, was started about 50 years ago. I was not a charter member. But it was mostly people from ag school. Joe Wilson. Not ag school, I mean med school. Mm-hmm. But Joe Wilson from ag school. Foster, do you know Foster? It was in food science.
Mm-hmm. I don't recognize that name.
And Cohen, Phil Cohen.
Oh, yes.
There was all kind of people. Now, in this club, Sims, Dr. Sims. I can't remember all the people.
Yeah, it doesn't.
I got some names here.
I know Santos. Mm? Santos and Gali's in it.
Well, that's another one.
That's another.
But at the present time, Eichmann. Kavler from the med school. Keekstra was in it. Sims, Jewel, you know Jewel Radiology. Joe Wilson was a member. Arthur Robinson, you know, the geographer.
Oh, yeah.
No, that's a different club. That's a different one. Strong was a member. Lawlich. These were all medical people, mostly. Now, Cohen, of course, just left. But for many years, that was work without fail. The other club also had Cohen. Bob Bowman, the primate lab.
I don't know him.
Sangali. Bill Sewell, you
yes,
heard?
Right, of course, I know Sewell, yeah.
And Romberg, recent addition. Smail belonged to that club for a while. Who else? Well, they meet once every 2 weeks, and this particular club and then didn't fail for many years.
Every other Tuesday.
Huh?
Every other Tuesday. Then.
Every other Friday.
Oh, Friday.
But this year has been very poor attendance.
Oh.
For during the winter months, you know, hardly any meeting. Now we have them back, so now it's gone. That club. They used to start at 7 and the last turn around about 1 o'clock in the morning.
Oh my.
Went about 2 o'clock. Finally turned on. Now we start at 7 and end at 10:30.
What kind of stakes do you play for?
Oh, 50 cent limit. Now you want to know who won.
Yeah, who won? Who wins?
Well, I asked some of these people, and every time you ask one, they said, I lost like hell, you know. But on the average, I'm a little ahead. Probably true.
Any big losers?
No, not really. No.
That's great.
There is another poker club, just starting, more recent, between the Bacti and Botany. Bacteriology, faculty members. Not really very attentive to the game. Lots of talk.
Lots of talk. Yeah. Who's in that one?
Well, who's in that one? From this place, Tom Leonard, Ray Everett, and myself. And Kickster was a member, he's now gone. So we'll probably recruit somebody else from here. From bacteriology, Glenn Chambliss. Over from the Ludden in biochemistry, comes quite often. Todor is a bacteriology department fellow. Ensign. Who else in there? Well, those are the main people, as I remember.
How did bacteriology and botany get together on that?
I guess Tom Leonard belonged both places. Mm-hmm. And he is more or less the secretary, so to speak, and calls the meetings and all that stuff. These are, from my point of view, younger people.
Mm-hmm.
Keep track a little bit what's happening in present time. Yeah.
Well, it's nice to know some of those clubs are continuing, you know, that younger people are picking them up.
Yeah, well, of course, the amount of... in this club we get a reasonable meal. But some of the wives object, of course, so some of the fellas had to do their own cooking. Sometimes with very bad effects, you know, smoke all over the house. We practically burned down Ensign's place a few weeks ago. Yeah, so it goes.
Yeah.
Yeah, no. I didn't mention Fort Tuesday, though, did I? Yeah.
Yeah, you just mentioned it, right? Mm-hmm.
Well, those were the groups that I have an association with.
Very interesting. What about since we're on kind of organizations, what about university committees? Did you serve for any length of time on any major university committees?
I was never on the university committee. That's what you want to know.
No, other university committees.
Yeah, I served on some. Of course, I was chairman of the committee that planned the Biotron. Mm-hmm. We'll go into
some
detail.
Yeah, we'll go into that in a few minutes.
I belonged to that Biotron committee until I retired. I belong to the Lakes and Stream Committee. Mm-hmm. I belong to the Space Committee.
What did the Lakes and Streams Committee do?
That was for you might call it reconstructive ecology right now, but it had to do with cleaning up the lakes and things like that.
Well, does that relate to what you were talking about yesterday with the research money that you obtained?
I don't think that's in force anymore, but there are people still working in this area. The Environmental Institute, you know, the Bryson thing is more or less an offspring of that. The Space Committee was very interesting. The old man, Farrington Daniels.
Farrington.
He was quite an active fellow. Lederberg was on that committee.
Good people.
Huh?
Good people.
Yeah, Sumi was on it.
Very good people.
Yeah, we had quite an interesting thing.
What was your essential charge on that committee?
Me?
No, what did the committee do as a whole?
It was the question of cleaning up the environment. not that. That was space. That was had to do with the space research. Sumi got much of his impetus from this thing.
Oh, really?
Lederberg developed a gadget, you know, for detecting extraterrestrial life.
Did he really?
Oh, yeah, beautiful thing. Mm-hmm. They built this gadget and testing it out. Threw it across the fence in this place where they lived, into the neighbor's lot. Just bare sign of life. that was funny.
So I take it he didn't come up with any extraterrestrial beings.
I don't think so.
That's wonderful.
Yeah, that was good. Farrington Daniels was a very interesting fellow. You know, you remember the movie with the man with the white coat?
Mm-hmm. Is that the one with Peter Alex Guinness?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, Farrington Daniels gave a talk about his career, and he went from one explosion to the next all through his life. yeah, those were nice people.
Yeah, Farrington Daniels is very well known by historians of the university.
Yeah, well, he had, he had no inhibition. He would talk about the very simplest thing in a way that most people would hesitate to do. But it was useful. Hmm? So I read his reports from his travel in Brazil. I was on a commission to went to Brazil. He wasn't on this commission, but we ran across him down there at the party. You know, these people in Brazil, they start parties about 10 o'clock and later. About 11 o'clock shows up old Farrington Daniels and his wife. And the hostess stuck there. Farrington Daniels, would you like a drink? Would you like? Oh, yes, that would be nice. And says, no. Says, what would you like? And says, orange juice. He was evidently a teetotaler, very...
In Brazil, a teetotaler.
No, but very firm and believer in this, and also that other people should be careful. I had some interaction with him, quite helpful to me. And I must say, Trog over at the college, he was, I must have had more than 50 of his students for minors.
Oh, really?
So I was going over there continuously for examination and things. He was more most very helpful to me.
Let's go from there into your teaching. Let's talk about your teaching for a little bit. We didn't get onto that yesterday. You mentioned yesterday that there was one course that you taught year for all of your years on campus. What was that course again?
Planting, growth of plants, growth and plant growth hormones and things of this type, and effects of various factors. When I first came, I took two courses. One was in plant nutrition, and in addition to this plant growth thing. And plant nutrition was quite useful because I got a lot of students from ag school. And gradually I turned that over to Gerloff, and he's continued to teach that until he retired. I think it was a very successful course for the ag school people through the years. The plant growth went on. I've taught that, I told you, 34 times in 33 years.
Did you have it memorized by the end?
No, that's the trouble with teaching biology. You know, the most difficult part is to know what to not to include. There's so much stuff that it's impossible to cover. But I think I had successful. Of course, I have a lot of people all over the world who in this area now.
Was that a graduate or an undergraduate course?
Well, it was a graduate students mainly, but occasional undergraduate. Very few. Well, those
did you develop any other courses throughout your career that?
Well, that you but I offered to participate in Botany 1, and it was not.
Oh, you told me that yesterday. Yes.
But I even offered to teach the course, you know, to give the lectures in Botany 1, but that was not. That would be okay if there would be a committee to tell me what to teach. So I told him he doesn't do that for anybody else, and they're not going to do it for me. So I never taught in Botany 1, but they had liberal studies, and that I taught, not regularly, but I gave a lot of lectures in that course. That was for a group of students, you know, with an integrated curriculum, kind of a precursor to the BioCore, actually. Now, so I did some lectures for that, but most of my teaching was in nutrition and growth. As to curricula, you know, Huskins and I, we try to get the pre-medical courses to include course in genetics. We went to the faculty, university faculty, with this business. That was fun. They weren't going to put any genetics into this. And I remember old Mac, the old physics professor.
Yes, Professor Mac.
Julian Mac.
Yeah.
He stood up and said in this meeting that, do you know, I don't think we have to be too radical. We don't have to be originators. But, you know, we don't want to be more than 30 years behind. But then Husker stood up and he talked about, you know, what the British Parliament was doing and all that sort of stuff. That didn't work at all. But if he'd said what the Big Ten people were doing, we might have had a course.
So what was their main argument against having genetics?
I don't know if there was any good argument, but in a few years later, there was Department of Medical Genetics in Lederberg and Crow, these people. Crow even became a chairman of that, and he became dean. I had a fly man in charge of the medical school. Well, that was impossible. Of course, a good medical fellow wouldn't even talk to a non-medical doctor. They had the dean over there from Utah. I remember that fellow had so much trouble.
Oh, yeah, the one they eventually kicked out, yeah. Brown.
Yeah, I know.
No, what was his name?
I don't remember.
Big controversy over him. I forget, it slipped my mind.
He showed up in my office one day and he says, "I bet you don't know why you're here, why I'm here." I said, "I know exactly why you're here. You have a fly man for the medical school. Dean, now you're looking for a tree surgeon."
Why was he there? What was that medical school? Yeah, it was a major controversy. It's just slipped my mind.
Well,
anyway.
He was not too he was not very successful in any case.
Yeah.
But you know, Fred and Elvium, they tried very hard to get more research-oriented medical school. And they met with continuous opposition from, remember Curari?
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
These people, they were pretty tough people. They wanted their things their own way.
They wanted to be more practitioner-oriented? Or?
Yeah, they were kind of a mafia-oriented in a way. They, you know, everything was by favor. That was old man. What's the name of the old fella? Very bad name for a surgeon. Yes. He knew all the politicians. I can't remember his name, but anyway, this old fella. He was on the inside. He could wiggle anything through the legislature. What was his name? Well, anyway, old man Trog had a heart attack. So I went to see him and I told him that I thought I had a heart attack too, and so I went over to med school. On the advice of my friend Hartman, I went up and see these people on the fifth floor, McArdle. And they said, "How did you get here?" And I said, "I walked up." And I said, "Well, you don't belong here." So they sent me to this old fellow. I can't remember his name. So he talked to me for a while and said, "Well, do you ever take a cocktail?" He says, "Cocktail once in a while is a good thing." So he wanted me to relax a little more.
Oh.
Mm-hmm. So I told Truog that I thought I had heart trouble too, so I went to see this old doctor. Truog says, "Oh yeah, also Dr. So-and-so, yeah, well, do you know my neighbor, she went to see him, he told her she had a tumor in the stomach. But, you know, she had her baby in a few months, just as natural as could be."
Well, you know, they're recommending that now for the heart. They're recommending at least a couple of drinks every night.
Yeah.
As a stimulus. So maybe what's-his-name was ahead of his time.
Oh, he was undoubtedly very... He was a very able fellow in his own way, no question. All-time practitioner. Well, how did we get on that?
Well, no, that was a natural introduction into what we're going to go into next, and I'm going to turn this tape over. Go ahead.
I want to tell you about the BioCorps because I was instrumental in starting that thing. One fine morning, Dean Young appears in my office right here and says that we got to do something about the teaching. We have just too many courses. Got to do something with the centralized courses. You know. So could I do something about that? So I told him that I could get some people together, and I got about 10 people for the Biotron Planning Committee. And I asked Joe Wilson to be the chairman of this, because he's very gentle and people listen to him pretty well. So we had meetings every week for a whole year, and we developed this core curriculum, which has been very successful, still is going, and I think has been a godsend to people who really want to be professional biologists. Because they get the integrated program, you see. Now the trouble with the teaching, in a big place like this, there are too many courses. The Botany Catalog lists about 57 courses.
Really?
Including some jointly with EXCO. Who's going to take this? So the material is handed out in such small doses. Every professor has to have a course to hide behind, you know. And that makes for very poor teaching. So an integrated curriculum is very useful. Well, there was great opposition to this, and we went around and talked to the different departments and all this. And old man Jung, he took part in some of these committee meetings. Was helpful, but you know, when it came to selling the thing to the faculty, he started out by saying that there has been a demand for certain new integrated courses. Of course, I don't say that. I say the prerogatives of the teachers is the primary thing. Completely opposite what they had been telling me. But we got this thing started.
And now, did you sell it first to the botany department?
Oh,
and then,
no.
And
no.
You went right to the university?
We went to all the different departments.
Different departments. Who was leading the opposition to this?
Oh, I don't know. Some of the old timers.
They just didn't want this.
Nobody wants to get rid of these courses.
Oh,
you know?
Yeah.
So the idea was to substitute this for some of the courses, but it turned out to be just an additional course. But it did enroll some 100, 200, 300 students.
And has that...
still going.
The BioCorps.
Yeah.
The BioCorps is still going. Do they revise it occasionally?
Because they bring in people. And this makes it possible for the good people in the ag school to participate in the elementary teaching. Burgess, I think, has been very active in this. Plout was running it for several years.
Yeah.
I think it's been good.
What year was that about that you started this up?
I don't know. I can't tell
that's
you.
Okay. Must have been
must have been 60s, late 60s there. Well, yeah. We had this integrated liberal studies before that. And that turned out to be kind of a Sunday school sort of thing. But better than the regular courses. Because they are so chopped up. Do you realize, I think, that most of the graduate students, biology, come from smaller universities. The big school don't turn out so many graduate students. Percentage as the smaller universities.
Really?
Huh? That's been my impression.
I
can't prove that.
Any idea? Do you have any idea why you think that would be?
Because they get the more integrated overall view. See, we teach this, that, and that specialties. Nobody gets a complete picture. Extreme case, the plant pathology, they had some very high-powered professors. They had four of them going at the same time, and not very well integrated. Mm-hmm. They had four plant pathology one courses. The students had to take at least two of them. In addition to botany one.
So this is, it was problems like that that the BioCorps really took care of.
Yeah, I don't know if they took care, but they really helped.
Helped, yeah. Mm-hmm. By streamlining things.
And that was a good thing.
Good.
Never taught in that, but that was instrumental in starting the thing. So I think that's a contribution.
And let's turn our attention, Professor Skoog, to the building of the Biotron. You were instrumental in that. You were involved from the earliest conceptions. Is that true? Is that an accurate statement?
The Biotron interest derived from initiative by a Professor Wendt at Caltech, who was interested in environmental biology, and he had already built what's called Phytotron at Caltech, controlled environment for growing plants. As I understand it, the actual control in the Caltech Phytotron was rather superficial. One of the people came from Berkeley to work there, he brought with him a thermometer. But Wendt did build this thing, and it was a good thing, and he did some very nice work in it. Then he got the idea that there should be more of this and on a national scale. I think when he was president of the Institute of Biological Scientists, something, he proposed to the National Science Foundation that there should be national environmental biology facilities, and it was decided to build some of these throughout the country, and he had a committee, and universities could apply to this committee, and there were some 20 universities put in applications. And this committee circulated around the country and listening to these people, and application had been submitted to NSF, and we were fortunate enough to win out this contest. I remember when the committee was here, people at Purdue were very anxious to have them come down there. They were calling me repeatedly, and they had an airplane waiting to take them down, pointing out that the weather was going to be bad and they better come soon. But we finally won out, so we got this $1.5 million. And but some of the members of our Biotron committee thought we ought to have it on a larger scale, and we went to Iran, and we got some more money from various sources. So the total of value, amount of money, I think was about $3 million or four, five maybe. By now you couldn't build that thing for $50 million.
You couldn't plan it for that.
Well, I was the chairman of the committee for the planning and for getting it. Association with this, the NSF said we should have a national symposium. People interested in environmental biology. So we had a 3-day session. People could come in and give ideas and proposals and things. And on the third day, Saturday morning, we presented this workshop results to the public. And there was old Carl Smith, remember him? He was a very...
No, I don't remember.
Obstreperous kind of fellow.
No, I don't know.
He stood up and said that he was so sorry I had come to this meeting to hear these antiquated ideas go back 200 years. It has nothing to do with this century. You know, in a sense, he was right. Well, then he had made proposal evidently for environmental facilities. So he came to me and he said that, you know, I am reporting you and to the NSF, and I'm suing you and the university for appropriating my ideas.
Did he?
No, I never seen him. But anyway, we got the money and we got a fellow to run to be the director, Sen from Canada. He was a rather able fellow, but you know, he had one weakness. He had to do everything himself. He could not delegate anything.
Mm. Hmm? Yeah,
every screw he had to turn. But he got the fellow to work with him. Anderson was his name, an engineer. Electronics, more or less. He developed a system for complete computerized control of the different rooms. You could sit in one room and see what's temperature, humidity, everything. Hmm? Each of these 48 rooms. Now, it took about 10 years to build this thing. And he had a committee for this, which included some 40 people.
Oh my.
Including state engineers, architects, representative from all different departments. Long table, you know. And here was Sen holding forth, and here was these other people holding on different discussions. How he ever did this, I can't.
How they ever got anything done with a committee of 40 people.
I can't. And he was really, must have been a very patient fellow.
Yeah, or else a masochist, one of the two.
Both. But anyway, he built a very nice thing.
Yeah, it's really nice. Hmm?
In time. But there was one trouble. I was arguing all the time, you've got to get some people in there on a permanent basis that are interested in environmental biology, not just use this thing as an ice box, you know, storage place. And we never did get an active group to facilitate the situation. Mm-hmm. Now, we were supposed to make space available campus-wide, but also on a national basis and regional basis, providing facilities. Mm-hmm. So we had a national committee for some years. Of course, Sen was very, very, very close. He wanted complete control. For example, old man went and started the whole thing. He would not allow him into the building. So not much utilization on the basis for which it was intended. Yeah. It was retarded very much. It really was not until he retired that people moved in and there was a very extensive use.
Started using it
for it. No, the trouble is that it was too expensive. People hesitate to go there with their projects. And I think it had been nip and tuck. Support from NSF was gradually reduced, and I think they finally withdrew. And graduate school had to face it. Now, when we started and made a proposition of having this thing, we had several meetings with people in the biological division, and LVM said that the only way we could build this thing was if there would be agreement made that we were willing to allocate about 10% of the total biology budget for the campus for use for this facility. So that was agreed. We don't find that in writing anywhere. That has been a trouble since.
I'll bet.
Getting the money.
I'll bet.
And I think it's just nip and tuck whether we're still going to have this thing. But it has possibilities for work, you know, that is very important. More and more every year. Hmm? Of course, the administration doesn't really understand this. Hmm? So I don't know what's going to happen. But Kozlovsky got in there, was director, and I was surprised how well he did. Then came a young fellow, Tibbets, who was a student of mine. And I don't know how well he worked, but I guess he kept it going. And I don't know what the status is now.
Did you get any initial funding from WARF or any of those places? Did they chip in at all? Or?
I suppose WARF was to help some. Yeah. Mm. We had a cooling system that was very expensive and used one of these gases, you know, these halogenated gases. It was leaking through the building, and that was not too good. And it was very expensive to replace that. Hmm? Cost about as much as the whole thing. Reason. But I don't know. I think it was a good idea, and it did some good things. But it was never utilized to the
underutilized
to the capabilities.
That's really too bad. Hmm? That's too bad. And was it essentially because that initial director was so tight in that area?
I think so.
That's unfortunate.
He did some good, very good things.
Yeah.
But people hesitated to come there altogether. Not only from the charge for the place being expensive, but also for the fact that he had to do every little thing for everybody.
Micromanage, I think.
So much for the Biotron.
Moving away from that for a second, yesterday you mentioned that Mrs. Bradley and Bill Jordan and maybe some other botany students had become involved with the Arboretum.
Yeah.
Was the botany department ever active in an Arboretum in an official capacity?
Or? Oh, yes. The botany department, more or less, directorship of the Arboretum. Curtis was very much involved.
Curtis Prairie.
And Cottam, I guess, was director of the committee for some time. Yeah, the botanist has been very much involved.
Were you ever involved in that at all?
No. In a botanic garden project.
Oh, tell me about that.
There's a little garden down here, you know. I started that. I went to LVM.
Which one is that? Which garden is that?
Right down here. Between chemistry and later Paul.
Oh, okay. Yeah. Hmm?
Yeah. That used to be a tennis court. Hmm. So I suggested to Elvin maybe he would have a little garden there. And he really loved flowers. Hmm. And he thought that was a good idea, and we got this little garden. But then I had the idea that on Picnic Point, you know, where the Picnic Point comes out, and here's the parking place.
Huh? Right. Hmm? Yeah.
Now you can go from there across to the border over here. See this thing? I suggest that we make all this a botanic garden.
Hmm. Hmm? Near the base of Picnic Point.
Huh?
Near the base of Picnic Point.
Yeah, or most of it. Hmm? Yeah. They wouldn't have to develop it all once you're starting. Hmm? And I sold this, I think, to Elvin. He was in favor, and I had a lot of people with money from med school. They were going to support this thing. We're going to have a botanic garden. There was vigorous opposition from the ecologists here, because they thought this would interfere with them funding the Arboretum. But the state of Wisconsin should have a botanic garden. Mm-hmm. Mm? And this would be an ideal place.
That would be a nice place, mm? Yeah.
Now, they still could have access for people to be walking them back and forth.
Yeah, but joggers and whatnot. Yeah.
But they could keep it from becoming a Coney Island.
What happened? Where did it get shot down?
When LVM died, Harrington and his people took over. Mm. I didn't think it was even worth bringing it up. So
what was it about Harrington that made you think it was not worth bringing up?
I don't know. I think he was only mainly interested in Harrington. You know, in the old days, Fred being the president, this was a remarkably good place administratively. He ran the old faculty meetings. He would fumble around, you know, there, like he didn't know what was doing, just to keep things slow down. Everybody stand up and give his speech, and, you know, openly and without hesitation. It was very fine. It was very good spirit in the campus. It was real. You came out of these faculty meetings, you felt good, you felt... Well, if you came to old man Fred with 5 years, the first question would be, what good would it do the place? And you went to see him in his place. He would say, well, see Connie. Connie was in the grad school. And there was a connection between Fred's office and Alvian's office. But if you went from Fred's place to Connie's place, you had to get outside and come around and come in the other way. Before you get to see Connie, Fred has already been there. So he would say, well, you know, I'm not the president, but if I were the president, this is what I would do.
It sounds like you knew Fred.
They had a very good system. Very good. And almost the main question, what good would it do the place? Harrington came in, the only question was, who pays what percentage?
I see.
Do you realize that was the case?
Well, I've heard many, many fine stories about E.B. Fred, his way of getting things done. That goes right along with everything I've heard over the years.
I've been around. I've been at Berkeley, I've been at Hopkins, I've been at Harvard. Harvard, but old man Conan was an autocrat of the worst kind. I told him he should get uniforms for the faculty with circles on the tail. Different color, one for the kids, students to kick, and one for the administration. Very autocratic. And Hopkins was a fascist organization, absolutely.
Yeah, E.B. ruled with a real loose...
Very nice place here. It was such a difference, you know, such remarkable freedom in this campus.
Do you think that was a contributing factor to the success of a lot of the goings-on on campus, the research and everything like that?
It was the real basis for all this progress. You see, everybody can do what they want to do, go everywhere on campus and talk and make plans for them. Minimum of interference from the top. Very little bookkeeping. We had one secretary, botany. Now we got about six or seven. Doing less. So that. Botanic Garden never came to fruition.
That's too bad. That would have been a good addition to the campus.
To the state. We wouldn't have to. Oh, Schorger. I'd never mentioned Schorger. He belonged to one of these clubs. I didn't realize at the time that he had so much money. But we could have soaked him for a good starting for him. there was a lot of people, good intention.
Makes you wonder what the campus would have been like if Elvium hadn't died and had been around for another 10 years or so.
It would have been different.
Sure sounds that way.
You know, I was just walking in this morning under the Van Fleck home. I was screaming to him that he should not put a building in this place. They had all these trees up there, and there was just a little walk. You can walk around the basket. And I said, you know, there's not enough room for people to walk.
You're right.
No, but, you know, then they open up this, they have this, enough, this big passage all around. Well, he had smiled when I told him this, but they had the plans, I think. he was a remarkable man. You ever read his presidential address, so to speak? When he was elected, he gave a speech to the faculty?
I don't think so, no.
Mm-mm. It's very nice thing about what he thought about the place and should be doing. Yeah, but you know something, he was too kind a person. He really suffered all the problems in the med school, that what kid did him in. He died from a heart attack. And, he really had his heart in the business.
That was a great loss to the university. It really was. Well,
Earlier, Professor Skook talked about some of the committees he served on in the university, but he also did a lot of work for the government, and he's going to discuss some of his professional assignments and relating to his government work.
Yeah, well, I served on a number of panels, professional panels. Maybe we should start with something else, too. Professional society memberships and offices held.
Okay, we can go with that one.
Mm-hmm. Well, I've been connected with Botanical Society. And I was at one time, I was chairman of the physiological section, 1952-53.
Mm-hmm.
Well, this was a very peculiar organization, I thought, the Botanical Society. They were not very progressive. I asked some money for the circulating membership to have election and all that sort of thing. And they said, well, you can avoid that. If you have the president being elected from the institution that you go for the next meeting, you don't have to send out all these circulars. which made it rather provincial, I thought.
I'd rather.
Yeah, but the botanical side, they had a lot to argue. They were always so much worried. There was a big feud between Botanical Society and the Society of Plant Physiologists. Plant physiologists separated around 1924. Mm. And Overton, who was here, was one of the principal people in starting the Physiological Society. Mm. And you'll find in the archives a lot of literature about all the feuding that went on. But from the point of view of physiologists, the Botanical Society is awkward. And at the present time, it's mostly deals with systematics, lichens, fungi, ferns, and all that sort of stuff. You see, they don't really seem to keep up with the real needs of the botanical science in this country. So now most of there are subdivisions, physiologists, ecologists, molecular biologists, biochemists, all that's different, big, strong societies relative to the Botanical Society. Botanical Society is an antiquated organization, unfortunately.
Mm-hmm.
In spite of Ray Everett's estimate. Ray Everett has been president of Botanical Society recently. And there have been some effort made to keep up, you know, modify, but not really a growing organization. But anyway, I was there. Now, I've been connected with the the ASPP, American Society of Plant Physiologists, and I have been on the Executive Committee 1959-62, Associate Editor, Plant Physiology 79 and 81. Yeah, well, I was president of that place in the fifties.
Hmm?
ASPP. And I've been local representative in charge of meetings and that sort of stuff. I had a good deal of interaction with the American side, the plant physiologist. Mm-hmm. It has been a growing institution. When I was there, there was about 1,000-1,200 members. Mm. Now there must 5,000.
Oh my!
And more than them, yeah, almost about half of them is from all over the world. Mm. It's the driving energy generating mechanism been the journal and the editorship under Gibbs, Martin Gibbs, for 30 years. He's run this journal and developed it into principal physiological, plant physiological journal in the world. And he made the society rich. Mm. The budget now is well over $1 million here.
Oh my.
And they got a big establishment outside Washington. Some gave an estate, big house and stuff. And they got all kinds of directors and secretaries and whatnot. And they have fostered very good meetings. Another way they have kept communication channels for experimental plant sciences, done a good job. That more than I've been connected with the journal, associate editor a couple of times, mostly in taking the place of other people who were away. And I've been on the committees all through this time until recently. There's another society started as the Growth Society and was more or less a New England kind of a thing in the early days, and gradually developed into the cell biologists, this Growth Society, that developed into American Society of General Physiologists. Mm. Hmm? Mm-hmm. And I was vice president 56, 57, president 57, 58. It's a reasonably good, but somewhat specialized society. They dealing mostly with development and mostly with the animal side, human side. And they got headquarters in what do you call this place on Cape Cod, Woods Hole.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah.
That's where they held their meetings and things. It's not as active by any means as the plant physiologist. Another one is the Society of Cell Biology, present time. That was called something else. I was president of that thing. That is also mainly animal and human physiology. But they had very active programs in plant sciences for years, and very often changed officers between plants and animals. I don't think I did too much to help them along. I sponsored a couple of symposia for these people. One of them was very good in Seattle on macromolecular regulation of development. Kurana was spoken their place, Bach was spoken their place. Some other people from here, as well as from other places around the country. Then I've been I've been connected with this known as Plant Growth Substance Association. We sponsored the first meeting that led to the organization of this society. International Growth Substance Association. In 1949, you know, there was a centennial celebration in this place, and they had sponsored all kinds of symposium. And this was one of the things. And
oh, really? I don't know
that. It turned out to be the first meeting of the international. The only reason we call it international, we had one fellow from Sweden.
Well, it gave it a nice sound.
The international thing was in retrospect. But we did have a nice meeting in 1949. We had a book, Plant Growth Substances, came from this, published by the Wisconsin Press.
That's the one you edited?
Yeah.
Yeah.
And that was the first one. Now, I was asked to hold another meeting, the 10th meeting of this thing, and that was 79. Meet every third year. So we had a big meeting in 1979 here. Lots of people. About 500, something like that. And I've been president of that place for 3 years. And I've been past president. I've been all kinds of things. Main contribution, except for these meetings, my part been the a journal which was started at the initiative of the Springer Verlag, which is the journal of plant growth regulation, which is now about 12 years old, more than that. And been growing very slowly, but is now picking up, and I think it'll be a fairly important journal with respect to the application of botanical sciences to biotechnology and things of this type.
So you started the journal, essentially. Were you editor at all of it?
No, but I got this. I was looking for editor. I never got the fellow I really wanted, but we got a fellow in Oregon State who is a nice person, kind of slow. But they do have people in their office in New York and in Heidelberg that keep track of these things. They push things pretty hard. And they're growing, they're developing, have turnover of people, and it's pretty active right now. There was another one started about a few months before we did, called Plant Growth Regulation, so we had to put Journal of. And the Journal of is in very small letters.
Is that other one still going?
Yes. by the Dutch people. Elsevier Publishing. And there was difficult. The secretary of this association was a Dutchman. He had very strong connection with the Elsevier Publishing people. But I think it's coming along. It's okay. And the symposium, I think, have been useful. been a series of volumes published.
I mean, series of journal volumes published about the symposiums, or
every 3 years one comes out. So these are some of the association.
Good. It's good. It's very helpful.
Well, I worked a lot for NSF. I've been on their committees, you know, and metabolic biology, and lately one was on applied mathematics, physical science, and biology and engineering.
Oh my!
That's a pretty wide subject. for 4 years.
And you were chairman for that for 1 year.
Yeah, that's what it says. Yeah. Hmm? No, that's the cancer society.
Oh, that's cancer. I'm slipping down here. I see. I misread it.
That panel on cancer, American Cancer Society, 4 years. I was visiting biology division, Brookhaven National Laboratory. I was chairman of that for 1 year. International Commission on Algal Culture. I've been involved in the international botanic congresses through the years. So these are some of the things. I really had quite a good deal to do with the.
I should say, that's very impressive. Yeah, Professor Skoog just went over about four lines of the 10 lines that are on the resume here, or vita. Yeah. And there's also a long list of honors that have been bestowed on you over the years, nationally and internationally. I see.
Yeah, quite a lot of stuff. Well, botanical sciences, they don't have the funding that you do get for the things which are connected with medical subjects. But even NIH, through the years, I've served several panels in NIH. I've been serving there for about 12 years. Mm-hmm. And even though they are medically oriented, they always had pretty good programs for plant sciences. I think that's probably changing now.
Yes. Well, what about throughout the course of the 80s with the Reagan years? Did things go down at that point in NIH? Did funding change during the Reagan years?
No, that's all joke. The funding has been going up and up and up.
Oh, really?
There's never been so much funding as under Bush.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
That's interesting.
Huh? That's talk. But, you know, the biochemists have a fantastic lobby right now.
Well, they do. I don't know that.
So the NIH, them have budget in the billions, and I think 5 billion or something. It used to be about 5 million. No, the funding has been going up and up and up. Bush administration actually gave much more money to the food development science than anything before, even though they talk about going down.
Yeah, I think the public perception was that it went down.
Yeah, but it's not so.
That's very interesting.
Now, there may have been some changes in direction. NIH in recent years have been giving relatively large amount of money to contract specific projects, you know, large-scale expensive projects. And now they have, for example, this big genome project, human genome, which takes fantastic funds. And of course, the astronomy, astrophysics, all this, always had a very, very expensive projects, NASA and all that. But it's not true that funding has been going down.
Mm-hmm. What do you see under Clinton?
I don't know.
Has he given any indications on that yet?
I don't really know. I'm not up on this.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. But my argument lately has the years been that cancer research or regular and associated activities in medical science is a cancer on American science. Well, it is, you know. They publish the Proceedings of the National Academy, comes out every 2 weeks, a big fat thing, 1,000 pages. It's mainly by molecular biology and medical biochemistry. Physical sciences may have one or two little articles.
I didn't know that. And they come out every other week?
Yeah. Yeah, I'll show you in there.
Yeah, I'll take a look at that.
There isn't that much new stuff. In addition to that, there is enormous size biochemical journals, American journal, biological science, what you call it. There's about 3 or 4 very large, and then there's the European molecular biology journals. There's too much duplication. It actually retards business. They do better to have 1/10 the number of people and have most of the others working as technicians. Yeah, I think so. Well,
anything else we have to say here?
I don't know.
I think you talked about some of your honors with Bill Jordan on his presentation.
Well,
but do you want? Are there any of these that stand out in your mind as you want to make a comment on?
Well, of course, I've been in National Academy of Sciences since 1956. Mm-hmm. Been getting all these big journals. I just gave them to the botany department. I get the tax part, you know. I can deduct from my income tax, which is helpful. So I've been the only thing I've been doing for the academy specifically, you know, I was on a commission. I went to Brazil to investigate training, science, and engineering. Spent 2 months traveling around on a commission. We went to 28 institutions. It was the most remarkable experience, from north of the equator down to very bottom of Brazil, with a man called Oliveira, Ernesto Oliveira, who sold old man Kubitschek, the Brazil president, on a project for improving science and education. He got all the funds from the government, and the academy people, Brazilian academy, they just hated this man. But he spent 7 years touring around the world studying educational systems, and he traveled all through Brazil, enormously informed. He took us, we had one philosopher who was the president of Vanderbilt and been president of the Ford Foundation, philosophically inclined. I know him so well and I can't give you the name. One physical chemist representing physical science, his name was Cole. He became president of Colby University. One engineer came from the Institute of Technology in Illinois. Grinton was his name. Became dean of the graduate school at the University of Florida. Very good man. And one biologist, and that was myself. We really had we wrote 3 reports. the Academy held them up for 2 years. They were too radical to be.
What kind of recommendations did you make in your report, generally speaking?
Yeah, generally that they should have some funding and help to. Oliveira was plunking for 100% devotion to academic function. You know, the presidents of the Brazilian universities at that time, they were industrial people mostly. They're, this was a kind of a thing they did on the side.
Oh, really?
Mm. So he was plunking for having research programs with people completely engaged and they're not associated with the other things. And they had some good programs. But we were selling those Brazilians reactors and stuff like that, and they really, you know, we went to one place. Some of these inland institutions were run by former generals. And I saw in one place they one of the old generals, he was unpacking boxes from Germany. Helmholtz spheres, these brass things, tuning forks and stuff. Looked like a museum with these new shiny pieces. The Germans were selling them all this gadgetry. You know, it was like selling beads to the Indians. Fantastic. We went to the, what corresponded to the West Point, you know, where they were training army engineers and stuff, and they had these Marconi things, telegraph and stuff.
Morse code type.
Very primitive. Mm. That was in 1960. Or
so. Oh my!
Yeah, it was really remarkable.
Did they follow up on any of your recommendations, as far as you know?
Yes, they did. Then we started things here and there. But you know, you could. We suggested improvements in different places and new positions. Particularly in chemistry, they were sending proof samples from their mines to Canada for testing. Ores and things like that. They had so little of their own. In Sao Paulo, they had a pretty good department of physical chemistry, people from here. They had some other good things in bacteriology and things like this, different places. But on the whole, not very good at that time. Yeah, they were importing wheat in those days. They're now selling wheat. Yeah. The Department of Agriculture, they had three projects on the project. All of them testing cinchona bark for purpose of evaluating the price for the customs. Yeah, that was very perfect. So we suggested, among other things, a professorship in organic chemistry in, what's the name of the capital?
Brasilia?
Yeah. And you know, Harold Deutsch had a fellow over here, Alphonse, who was the wealthy man's son, not doing too well with Deutsch. And he came around with something, and Deutsch, he wanted to publish, you know. Deutsch says, you can't publish this. Now you go and do some really hard work. And he says, I can publish in my father's journal. No, you go and do a good job. And then you get the master's degree and you get out of here. Well, about 2 years after, 2-3 years after I came back from Brazil, Harold Deutsch gets a letter from Alfonso. He says, there is a new position, professorship in organic chemistry in Brasilia. That was a hell of a fight, but I got a job. Well, you can make in the professorship, you see, and then a fellow like that gets in and he'll be sitting on that and being nothing done for 30 years.
Yeah. Hmm? Is he still down there?
I suppose he is.
Lifetime appointment. Lifetime appointment.
I suppose. Yeah. Well, that's looking at the sad part. There were some people with fantastic. There was a guy, fellow here, bacteriologist trained here, who had an institute in one of these cities. He was making vaccines for the whole doggone country. He was veterinarian, but he was very active group of people doing a lot of good things. Mm-hmm. But you know, he had to pay duties on the materials that he was importing from this country for making vaccines. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. The customs ran everything in Brazil in those days. Mm-hmm. So there was primitive, I thought.
Have you been back to Brazil since
no,
then?
No, I haven't. But they have come a long way since then.
Were you on any other international fact-finding groups like that?
No, but I was on a committee on the NSF. No, the National Academy had a Eastern European program, you know, Russia and Eastern European countries, making grants. I served on that for about 6 years. Russia, Czechoslovakia, Bulgaria, all these countries.
What when was that about?
I don't know if I have it here. No, I don't have it.
Hmm? Well, never mind.
Well, it was in the late 70s, early 80s. So it was after I retired. Mm-hmm. Okay. Hmm? Early 80s. So we had quite a lot of interaction with these people. And of course...
When did you do that Russian?
Well, in 1968, Anton Lang from... He was director of the Plant Research Laboratory at Michigan State. Born in Russia, we traveled to about 10 different institutions in Russia, from the west coast, clear back to Lake Baikal, Irkutsk. giving talks and having conferences with the people in the different National Academy laboratories.
Well, how were the labs? Were they pretty well set up?
Well, some of them had good equipment. The Botanical Institute in Moscow had a good deal of equipment. Some of them rather primitive. I think that there has been a great push following the disappearance of Lysenko in genetics and in the experimental sciences and biology in Russia. Right now I think they have some good people in Moscow and in some of the other institutions. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, we also went to East Germany, Czechoslovakia, traveled around seeing the people. So I've had some. Mm-hmm. Now I've had continuous connection with Czechoslovakia because of people at their national academy institutions. People I know, some of them been working here and some of them have been visiting here, who've been in charge of this work. So every few years they have an international symposium related to plant hormones and things of this type, and I've been visiting those.
What about Sweden? Have you ever had any association with them since?
Yes, I was invited there in the late 50s to give some lectures. I was there a few months at the Swedish, what is now the Swedish College of Agriculture. And I spent a few months at the University of London in 1946, at the Institute of Plant Physiology. And I got, now I got honorary degrees from these places. And I've been giving, going back there time to time, giving lectures. So I had pretty good connection with the science in Sweden. I also worked in the institute in the University of Gothenburg, involved with neurobiology and the methodologies for measuring DNA in single cells and on a micro scale in a very special methodologies they developed. And people from there came over here to help us set up instrumentation and work in this area. So I've had good connection with the Swedes.
As you look back over your distinguished career at the University of Wisconsin and preceding it, are you satisfied? Are you pleased with the direction your life has taken in your field study of botany?
Oh, I never thought much about that from one day to another. I do regret that I could not have had more support from this department and from the letters and science. We could have done so much more than we actually did. We could have, in the practical side. At this time, the kind of work we're doing is now worldwide, growing at an enormous rate in the tissue culture, and the application of this work in development of new crop plants, new plants for making complex organic compounds and for the improvements of crop plants on the basis of nutritional quality and yield productivity. We could have done much more here, and we could have had a great deal of influence on the biology, development of biology, plant science at this university. We really could have. So in a sense, I'm sorry for that. On the other hand, we had a good time. We had some very good collaboration between physiologists, botany, and other parts of the university campus. And we turned out a lot of students that have gone all over the world and done very well. So I'm not unhappy. Wherever I go, I can find people that I know. Mm-hmm.
Do you still get Christmas cards from a lot of your students?
Oh, yes. Yeah, although I don't write much myself.
Well, you're the professor. It should be the student's responsibility to do that.
Well, worse than that, I get requests to write statements with respect to their efforts in now retiring. It used to be that I had to have recommendations for new jobs, but now it's a question of retirement ceremonies.
And I think on that note, we will end the interview.
Yeah. Okay. Mm-hmm.